Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Connie reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, August 27th, 2020. Health and Wellness. MMH CEO CDC urge flu vaccinations. Russell Myers. It is important that we not add a significant flu outbreak to the COVID outbreak. By Stuart Doreen. Flu season is coming. That was one of the messages from Midland Health CEO Russell Myers on Tuesday during his weekly press conference. He made it a point to say that people need to add a step to their coronavirus pandemic, best practices, and get a flu shot. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, states on its website that getting vaccinated in July or August is too early, especially for older people, because of the likelihood of reduced protection against flu infection later in the flu season. September and October are good times to get vaccinated, the CDC reports on its website. However, as long as flu viruses are circulating, vaccination should continue even in January or later. Myers said Tuesday those measures that people are taking, including hand washing, to avoid acquiring COVID-19 will help in the fight against the flu. The CDC recommends annual influenza vaccinations for everyone 6 months and older with any licensed age-appropriate flu vaccine. But as soon as the flu vaccine is available, we encourage everyone in this community to be particularly diligent this year about getting your flu vaccine, Myers said. It is important than ever that we not add a significant flu outbreak to the COVID outbreak we're already dealing with. Recognizing we do have an effective vaccine for the flu, and all we've got to do is take advantage of it. Meyer expects it will be another month before most places have the vaccine available. COVID and smoking. Myers also talked about a University of Texas study that suggested that the use of cigarettes and e-cigarettes is a factor in increasing the susceptibility of a patient and the severity of illness for a patient should they contract COVID. So if you need another reason to quit smoking or quit using e-cigarettes now, you have one, Myers said. It is one more thing we can add to our list of things we can do to prevent this disease, not from spreading, but having a severe outcome on a patient who contracts it. Stop smoking. It's not too late to do that. Entertainment. Wagner Noel to host drive-in concerts. The Josh Abbott Band into cable to play this weekend. By J.C. Lewis. The Josh Abbott Band and the Into Cable will be performing live drive-in concerts at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center. 3G Entertainment, which is based out of McAllen, and LJ Productions Midland are helping put on the drive-in concert, which is unlike the pre-recorded concerts shown at movie theater drive-ins. Part owner of 3G Entertainment, Nestor Garcia, said the company has had to modify how live concerts are held during the pandemic. Unfortunately, the pandemic, hit during one of our peak times of the year because we do a lot of events on the coast, including South Padre Island and Corpus Christi during spring break, Garza said. We had about 7 events lined up and were only able to have 1 during spring break. He said it has been a difficult time for production companies trying to host live concerts. Garza's company attempted to have a social distanced, platform-seated event at South Padre Island, but was unable to host the event after backlash. He said the business has been fighting a back-and-forth battle, but has gone forward with drive-in-style concerts, which they plan to do for the rest of 2020. 3G Entertainment has done several events at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center and received approval for the drive-in concerts to happen. The Josh Abbott Band will perform Friday night, and Into Cable will perform Saturday night. He said cars will be spaced out, but people can get out of their vehicles and sit up chairs. People just can't be walking around, he said. No concessions will be available, but people can bring in their own food and drinks. Concert goers will be required to wear masks while using the restrooms. Tickets are for 6 people per vehicle and start at $100 and go up to $225. The shows will start around 8:30 p.m. Into Cable had a drive-in concert last week in Dallas, he said. Their concert in Dallas had about 800 cars, he said. If people feel safe, which is what we want, then people will start coming out more. Everyone wants live entertainment, and I think we can make it safe. I think more people will want to come out. Garza said he was hesitant about doing drive-in concerts. However, when they produced a drive-in concert in El Paso, he changed his mind. I was telling my partner that I wished I could have been a spectator. It was cool because you could bring your own food, he said. When you see an artist goes off stage, people always chant encore, and they were doing that in El Paso. But everyone started turning on their car alarms. 3G Entertainment is bringing in more production, and that means a taller stage to accommodate the full size of the parking lot, he said. It is more like a full-scale festival production with no corners cut, he added. Want to attend? Tickets available at wagnernoel.com. Laura Bears Down. The caption, Mark Albums left and Hunter Clark watch waves crash ashore Wednesday as outer bands from Hurricane Laura begin to hit the coast in High Island. The two are from Bogota near Paris, and they came to board up windows at a beach house in High Island. Weather. Laura could bring unsurvivable surge. By Melinda Desolate, Jeff Martin, and Stacy Plisance, Associated Press. Del Camry, Louisiana. Laura strengthened Wednesday into a menacing Category 4 hurricane, raising fears of a 20-foot storm surge that forecasters said would be unsurvivable and capable of sinking entire communities. Authorities implored coastal residents of Texas and Louisiana to evacuate and worried that not enough had fled. The storm grew nearly 87% in power in just 24 hours to a size the National Hurricane Center called extremely dangerous. drawing energy from the warm Gulf of Mexico waters, the system was on the track to arrive late Wednesday or early Thursday as the most powerful hurricane to strike the U.S. so far this year. It looks like it's in full beast mode, which is not what you want to hear if you're in its way, University of Miami hurricane researcher Brian McNulty said. Winds were expected to reach 150 miles per hour before landfall, and forecasters said up to 15 inches of rain could fall in some places. One major Louisiana highway already had standing water as Laura's outer bands moved ashore with tropical storm force winds. Thousands of sandbags lined roadways in tiny La Petite, with winds picked up as shoppers rushed into a grocery store in low-lying Del Cambri. Trent Savoy, 31, said he was staying put. With four kids and 100 farm animals, it's just too hard to move out, he said. Governor Greg Abbott and Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards fretted that the dire predictions were not resonating, despite authorities putting more than 500,000 coastal residents under mandatory evacuation orders. In Lake Charles, Louisiana, National Guard members drove school buses around neighborhoods offering to pick up families. Across the state line in Port Arthur, few stragglers boarded evacuation buses, and city officials announced that two C-130 transport planes offered the last chance to leave. Abbott warned that people who fail to get out of harm's way could be cut off from help long after the storm hits. A Category 4 hurricane can cause damage so catastrophic that power outages may last for months in places, and wide areas could be uninhabitable for weeks or months. The threat of such devastation posed a new disaster relief challenge for a government already straining to deal with the coronavirus pandemic. Among the parts of Louisiana that were under evacuation orders were areas turning up high rates of positive COVID-19 tests. The National Hurricane Center kept raising its estimate of Laura's storm surge from 10 feet just a couple of days ago to twice that size, a height that forecasters said would be especially deadly. By Wednesday afternoon, Laura had maximum sustained winds of 145 miles per hour as it churned about 155 miles south of Lake Charles. Heed the advice of your local authorities. If they tell you to go, go. Your life depends on it today, said Joel Klein, Tropical Program Coordinator at the National Weather Service. It's a serious day, and you need to listen to them. On Twitter, President Donald Trump also urged coastal residents to heed local officials. Hurricane warnings were issued from St. Louis Pass to intra-coastal city Louisiana and reached inland for 200 miles. Storm surge warnings were in effect from Freeport, Texas, to the mouth of the Mississippi River. For some, the decision to leave home left them with no place to stay. Wary of opening mass shelters during a pandemic, Texas officials instead put evacuees in hotels. But Austin stopped making arrivals before dawn because officials said they ran out of rooms. Other evacuees called the state's 211 information line and were directed to Ennis outside of Dallas, only to be told after driving hundreds of miles that there were no hotels available or vouchers. Taniqua Ned and her sisters showed up without money to rent a room, saying the family had burned through its savings after losing jobs because of the coronavirus. "The COVID-19 is just totally wiping us out," said Shandala Joseph, 43, a teacher in Port Arthur. Edwards lamented that the impending storm meant suspicion of community test for COVID-19 at a crucial time, as elementary and secondary schools in Louisiana are opening and students are returning to college campuses. "We're basically going to be blind for this week," Edwards said, referring to the lack of tests. Forecasters said storm surge topped by waves could submerge entire towns. Water was already rising in the small Louisiana community of Holly Beach in the imperiled Cameron Parish, which forecasters have warned could become part of the Gulf of Mexico after the storm comes ashore. Laura is expected to cause widespread flash flooding in states far from the coast. Flood watches were issued for much of Arkansas, and forecasters said heavily rainfall could arrive by Friday in parts of Missouri, Tennessee, and Kentucky. Laura is so powerful that it's expected to become a tropical storm again once it reaches the Atlantic Ocean, potentially threatening the Northeast. Becky Clements, 56, evacuated from Lake Charles after hearing that it could take a direct hit. She and her family found an Airbnb hundreds of miles inland. Almost 15 years have passed since Hurricane Rita destroyed the city. "The devastation afterward in our town and that whole corner of the state was just awful," Clements recalled. "Whole communities were washed away, never to exist again. So knowing how devastating the storms are, there was no way we were going to stay for this." The church educator said she fears for her office, which is in a trailer following recent construction. "I'm very much anticipate that my office will be gone when I get back. It will be scattered throughout that field." The hurricane also threatens the center of the U.S. energy industry. The government said 84% of Gulf oil productions and an estimated 61% of natural gas productions were shut down. Nearly 300 platforms have been evacuated. Consumers are unlikely to see big price hikes, however, because the pandemic has decimated demand for fuel. If Laura moves further west toward Houston, there will be a much bigger gasoline supply problem, oil analyst Andrew Lippo said. Since refineries usually take 2 to 3 weeks to resume full operations. Laura closed in on the U.S. after killing nearly 24 people on the island of Hispaniola, including 20 in Haiti and 3 in the Dominican Republic, where it knocked out power and caused intense flooding. Laura to join costly list of catastrophic Gulf Coast hurricanes by Christopher Martin and Brian K. Sullivan of Bloomberg. Hurricane Laura, which is roaring toward Louisiana and eastern Texas, threatens to become the 8th storm that's Category 4 or stronger to receive the U.S. Gulf Coast in modern history. It follows Michael, which devastated the Florida Panhandle in 2018, and Harvey, which deluged Houston in 2017. Three of the eight biggest storms have come in the past 4 years, posing significant risk to Gulf of Mexico drilling platforms that account for as much as 17% of America's oil production and about 3% of its natural gas output. Four of the top hurricanes were in the 1950s and 1960s, and Charley struck in 2004. Laura is already a Category 3 major hurricane, and its winds are forecast to peak at 145 miles per hour. That would be stronger than Hurricane Harvey had at landfall in 2017. It may cause $25 billion in damage and economic losses, which at least $5 billion in destruction to refineries alone, said Chuck Watson, a disaster modeler with Enki Research. Most expensive Atlantic hurricanes. Storm number one is Katrina, the year 2005. Category 3, the cost is $170 billion. Second one is Harvey in 2017, a Category 4 with $131.3 billion. Third one, Maria, 2017, a Category 4 at $94.5 billion. Fifth one, Sandy, 2012, Category 1, $74.1 billion. The storm Irma, year 2017, Category 4 at $52.5 billion. Number 6, Andrew, 1992, Category 5, cost is $50.5 billion. Last one, Ike, year 2008, Category 2, cost $36.9 billion. The source is National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Cost values are based on the 2020 Consumer Price Index adjusted cost. As Laura approaches, Texas reports 229 new virus deaths. Associated Press. Austin. As Texas braces for Hurricane Laura on Wednesday, state officials said there were 229 newly reported deaths from COVID-19 and 5,045 newly reported cases of the coronavirus that causes it. As people evacuated the upper Texas coast, emergency officials have been urging them to take safeguards against the virus as well. Laura strengthened Wednesday into a Category 4 hurricane, which can cause damage so catastrophic that power outages may last for months in places. The number of COVID-19 patients in Texas hospitals has continued to drop and stood at 4,806 patients Wednesday. On Tuesday, the number dipped below 5,000 for the first time since June. The Texas Department of State Health Services said Texas so far has reported more than 592,000 cases since the pandemic tracking began in March, and 11,805 deaths have been reported. the true number of cases is likely higher because many people haven't been tested, and studies suggest people can be infected and not feel sick. For most people, the coronavirus cases is mild or moderate symptoms, such as fever and cough, that clear up in 2 to 3 weeks. For some, especially older adults and people with existing health problems, it can cause more severe illness, including pneumonia and death. 3 new MISD cases reported Tuesday, total cases up to 46, by Stuart Doreen. Midland ISD reported 3 new coronavirus cases involving staff members this week. The cases were from employees on Fasken, Emerson, and Peace elementary campuses and bring the total number of cases this month to 15. Last week, there were also 3 cases, including 2 reported at Long Elementary, 1 on Friday, and 1 on Saturday, according to the Midland ISD COVID-19 dashboard. The total number of coronavirus involving MISD staff members or employees is 46 during the pandemic. The other case from last week happened at Lee Youth Center, which required the center to be closed August 20th. It reopened on August 21st. Midland ISD has said that each notification triggers a series of steps, which includes sanitizing and disinfecting, notification of individuals in close proximity, and notifications to the health department. Anytime we become aware of an individual with a confirmed case who was present at a public gathering, such as a school board meeting or sports event, we will also issue a press release. ECISD reported the total number of cases on its campuses since August 5th is 38. MISD cases this month: Fasken, Emerson, and Peace on Monday, Long Elementary Saturday and Friday, Lehigh Youth Center August 20th, Central Office August 14th, Bowie Elementary August 14th, Long Elementary August 12th, Alamo Junior High August 10th, Lee Freshman High August 6th, San Jacinto Junior High August 6th, Midland High August 5th, Central Office August 4th, and Bunch Elementary August 4th. The last closures was Lehigh Youth Center August 20th, Child Nutrition Services July 29th, and School Plant July 29th. Active COVID cases in Midland County drop by 200 Wednesday, from staff reports. The Midland Health Department reported 32 new coronavirus cases Wednesday, bringing the number this week to 84. The number of cases this week still trails the 90 reported through 3 days last week. Last week's total number of cases during the entire week was the lowest going back to mid-June. The Wednesday report also showed an increase in the number of Midland County residents who recovered from 1,391 on Tuesday to 1,623 on Wednesday. That meant the number of active cases dropped from 1,518 to 1,318. There are 904 isolated cases, 414 under investigation, 160 unable to locate refused, and 65 COVID-19 related deaths in Midland County. The cases Wednesdays are reflective of lab results from Tuesday. Coronavirus reports the cases on Monday 12, Tuesday 40, Wednesday 32, cases this week 84. Total cases through Wednesday last week 90. Total cases 3,166.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, August 27, 2020. 385th's new judge. Judge Robin Darr, who retired in February, swears in Judge Lee Robertson, who was appointed by Governor Greg Abbott on Monday for the 385th District Court. Robertson is accompanied by husband Stephen and children Emma, 7, and Ethan, 10. Firefighters doing virtual fill the boot. The International Association of Firefighters and Professional Firefighters Association of Midland, Local 4405, is doing a virtual fill the boot, which will take the place of the annual in-person campaign for the Muscular Dystrophy Association. Instead of placing donations in boots held up by Midland firefighters at intersections across Midland, residents can donate at filltheboot.donordrive.com/participant/Midland. The virtual campaign continues through the end of the year, said Greg Wells with Midland Local 4405. Their goal is $5,000, according to the website. Watering schedule. The City of Midland has adjusted the lawn and landscaping watering schedule, which will allow residents to water 4 days a week instead of two. Even-numbered addresses can water on Sunday, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and odd-numbered addresses can water on Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. How sick are you? Midland Memorial Hospital offers a nurse triage program, 68 Nurse. The program is designed to help people determine whether their health situation warrants a trip to the emergency room. Midland residents can call the line by dialing 686-8773. The program is free and available 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Local nurses are available to help you determine the best place to receive care for your situation. 68 Nurse can help you save time and money by directing you to the most appropriate health care option, whether it's a neighborhood clinic, urgent care center, emergency room, or just staying home. When it's open. Midland County Tax Assessor, Collector, 2110 North A Street, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Wednesday, Friday 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Thursday, 688-4810. Midland Central Appraisal District, 4631 Andrews Highway, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday, 699-4991. Department of Public Safety, Driver's License Office, 2800 Wright Drive, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday and Wednesday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Tuesdays, 686-1120. U.S. Postal Service, Downtown, 100 East Wall Street, 8:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday, Village, 2315 West Louisiana Avenue, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday and Friday, Graves, 3304 West Wadley Avenue, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Saturday, Claydesta, 612 Veterans Air Park Lane, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday, GMF Midland, 1000 Loop 40, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday, Centennial Branch, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday, 2503 West Loop 250 North, 742-7400. Downtown Branch, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday, 301 West Missouri Avenue, 688-4320. Know a member of the military coming home? Military families can call 352-0785 or email Vicki Gomez, ZEMOGV, at cable1.net. When they know their member of the military is flying into Midland International Airport, so the Permian Basin Welcome Home Committee can be there to greet them. Honor those who served. There are many organizations in operation right here in the Permian Basin that are at the task of serving all kinds of needs for present and former members of our military. Some of them are Show of Support, 687-2167, Honor Our Troops, 889-0177, RealThanks, 528-6633. Centers for Children and Families, 570-1084. Midland College Veterans Affairs Office, 685-4511. Permian Basin Welcome Home Committee, 366-3458. Soldiers of Today and Yesterday, 631-3429. Today in History. Today's Thursday, August 27, the 240th day of 2020. There are 126 days left in the year. On this date, in 1989, the first U.S. commercial satellite rocket was launched from Cape Canaveral, Florida, a Delta booster carrying a British communications satellite, the Marco Polo 1.
Obituaries. Alan Thomas Mercer, March 15, 1933 to August 25, 2020. Alan T. Mercer passed away on Tuesday, August 25, 2020, at his home in Midland, Texas, at age 87, with his family present. He was born March 15, 1933, in Nacogdoches, Texas, to parents Isaac Cornelius Mercer and Helen Margaret Campbell Mercer. He graduated from Nacogdoches High School in 1951 and earned his B.A. from Stephen F. Austin University in 1955. He went on to earn a Master's of Education from Stephen F. Austin University in 1959. Most of his 35-year career was as a beloved public school biology teacher and a school bus driver in Longview, Texas. He married Marie Wedgeworth on August 28, 1956, at the Corinth Baptist Church in Tipton, Texas. Alan and Marie were happily married partners in life and in gardening for 62 years until Marie preceded him in death in 2017. Alan's surviving family includes his daughter and son-in-law, Janice and Rhett Gist of Midland, daughter and son-in-law, Darlene and Terry Wilson of Lexington, 5 grandchildren, and 8 great-grandchildren. He has many nieces, nephews, and other family members. Alan was preceded in death by all of his 6 siblings, by his great-grandson Mercer Michael Gist, and his wife of 62 years, Marie Wedgeworth Mercer. The family would like to express their gratitude towards Home Hospice for their compassionate care. Friends are invited to visit with the family from 5 to 7 p.m. on Thursday, August 27, 2020, at Natalie Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home in Midland, Texas. Services will be Friday, August 28, 2020, at 2 p.m. at Natalie Pickle and Welsh Chapel in Midland. Online streaming of the services will be available. Burial will follow at Rest Haven Cemetery in Midland. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to Home Hospice, 808 Missouri, Midland, Texas, 79701. Arrangements are under the direction of Natalie Pickle and Wells Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.mpwelch.com. Billy Bryant. Billy Bryant, 90, of Hilltop Lakes, Texas, passed away August 23, 2020, in College Station, Texas. A visitation for family and friends will be held Thursday, August 26, 2020, from 3 to 5 p.m. in the Chapel of Cozart Funeral Home in Normandy, Texas. A graveside funeral service will be held Friday, August 27, 2020, at 11 a.m. at Marquess Cemetery in Marquess, Texas. Dr. Tony Taylor of Hilltop Lakes Chapel will officiate. Billy was born in Jasper, Texas, to parents Thomas and Bertha Seal Hall. She was a food service director for many years and employed by several independent school districts. She and her husband, Thurman, moved to Hilltop Lakes in 1986. Billy was preceded in death by both parents, her husband, Thurman Bryant, and a daughter, Christina Bryant. She is survived by two sons, Thurman, Sonny, Bryant Jr., and wife Judy of Hilltop Lakes, Texas, and Terry Wayne Bryant and wife Beverly of Midland, Texas, four grandchildren and 10 great-grandchildren. In lieu of flowers, family requests donations be made to Beta Sigma Phi Sorority, Post Office Box 1405, Hilltop Lakes, Texas, 77871. Doris Ann Shanks. Doris Ann Shanks, 85, of Midland, passed away on Sunday, August 23, 2020, surrounded by her family. The family will receive friends from 6 to 8 p.m. Friday, August 28, 2020, at Natalie Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home. Funeral services will be at 10 a.m. Saturday, August 29, 2020, at Natalie Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home Chapel. Burial will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Doris was born on March 3, 1935, in Concord, North Carolina, to Dora Mullis and Charles Winsell. She married Cloyd Shanks on August 12, 1970, in Lovington, New Mexico. She worked at Walgreens for over 25 years before retiring. She was the mother of six children and beloved by so many. Doris is survived by daughters Brenda Purcella of Midland, Texas, Linda Rose and husband Ford of Midland, Texas, sons Alan Patterson and wife Claire of Acworth, Georgia, Louis Shanks and wife Candy of Argyle, Texas, six grandchildren, and numerous great-grandchildren. Doris is preceded in death by Father Charles Winsell, Mother Dora Mullis, brothers Buck Winsell, Pete Winsell, Morris Winsell, sisters Edith Winsell, Paulina Winsell, sons Billy Patterson, and Tracy Shanks. Arrangements are under the direction of Natalie Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelsh.com. Wanda L. Collier. Wanda L. Collier went to be with the Lord on August 24, 2020. She was 87 years old. Wanda was a graduate of Angelo State University and retired from Atmos Energy in Midland, Texas, where she lived most of her life. She married Don Collier in 1955, and together they spent the majority of their time, including youth rodeo, with their sons. She is preceded in death by her mother and father, Bella and Loy Mashburn, and husband Don Collier. She leaves behind two sons, Mike Collier of Stephenville, Jason Collier and wife Dawn of Midland, one granddaughter, and one niece. The viewing will be held from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. Thursday, August 27, 2020, at Natalie Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home. Graveside service will be held at 11 a.m. Friday, August 28, 2020, at Rest Haven Memorial Park. In lieu of flowers, the family asked donations be made to Wounded Warrior Project. Arrangements are under the direction of Natalie Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.mpwelsh.com. Evelyn Jeanette Laney. Evelyn Jeanette Laney, 79, of Midland, passed away on Saturday, August 22, 2020, surrounded by her family. A graveside service will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, August 29th, 2020, at American Heritage Cemetery. Evelyn was born on March 17, 1941, in Winona, Mississippi, to Willie and William Overstreet. She and Dad were married on September 1st, 1961, in Winona, Mississippi. She and Dad lived in 9 states before settling in Odessa in 1983 and opening factory warehouse and transportation and truck specialties on Andrews Highway and Frank Tank Supplies in 1999, which still operates today. Evelyn is survived by her husband, Gerald Laney of Midland, daughters Nandra Laney Dennis and husband Sam of Hempstead, Texas, Stephanie Michelle Laney and partner Mary Sanchez of Midland, Chastity Laney Baker and husband Bruce of Midland, and Amanda Laney Dickinson and husband Stephen of Midland, son Israel Patino of Odessa, 9 grandchildren, 4 great-grandchildren, sisters Dovie Croter of Winona, Mississippi, Louise Rogers and Seth of Brandon, Mississippi, Bobby Thompson of Winona, Mississippi, Lillian Braswell of Cypress, Texas, and Linda Beckman and Bobby of Winona, Mississippi. Evelyn is preceded in death by her parents and 2 brothers, John and Robert Overstreet. The family would like to express their gratitude towards Hospice of Midland personal caregivers Jody, Des, Shalon, Ada, and Lashern, Comfort Keepers Dr. M. Akwasala, and Home Care Plus. Arrangements are under the direction of Naylee Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelsh.com. Death notices. Eloise Eddie White, 81, passed. Eloise Eddie White, 81, passed from this life on August 20th, 2020, in Odessa. She was born to the late P.O. and Luetta Vines in Crane, Texas. Eddie is survived by her son, Weldon White, and 1 brother. A celebration of life will be held on Saturday, August 29th, 2020, 1 p.m. at Living Way Four Square Church in Midland. John Wymore will be officiating. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory. Federico Marquez. Federico Marquez, 79, of Midland, passed away August 25th, 2020. Viewing will be from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. Thursday, August 27th, 2020, at Naylee Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home in Midland. Funeral service will be held at 10:30 a.m. Friday, August 28th, 2020, at Naylee Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home in Chapel, with burial following at Rest Haven Memorial Park.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, August 27th, 2020. Front page. Odessa Strong, 1 year later. The faces behind the calls. Dispatchers recall trauma of mass shooting by Michael Merlo, M-M-E-R-L-O, at OAOA.com. City of Odessa Public Safety Communications dispatchers work 4 days on, 4 days off, and 12-hour shifts. They take calls and dispatch the appropriate first responders to those in need. Inside their office is a light blue tile floor leading to multiple monitors and call-taking stations. The television is on and the volume is low. The dispatcher's voices are calm regardless of what or who is on the other end. Sonia Cortez, 35, wasn't supposed to work on August 31st, 2019, but a dispatch supervisor was moving to a new house and had asked for the day off. So she covered for her colleague as one of the 5 call takers who were on duty that holiday weekend. That would be the weekend that gunman Seth Autor would shoot 7 people to death and injure another 25 in a shooting spree that took him all over Odessa and parts of Midland. Autor would die in a field near Synergy Theater that day after a gun battle with law enforcement. As a quality assurance specialist, Cortez, who had previously spent 9 years as a dispatcher, said she hadn't been dispatching as much as she used to, and it was a pretty normal day until a gunshot victim popped up on her screen. I dispatched that gunshot victim, and you know a gunshot victim is kind of a crazy thing, but it's not like it never happens, so I wasn't like freaking out or anything, she said. She said a second gunshot victim showed up on her computer screen, and she thought maybe it was the same one or maybe the wrong address was given, so she went to confirm that it was a second victim. It was. A third gunshot victim appeared on the screen, she said, and then she began shaking. I don't think I ever stopped shaking, and I just feel like at some point I had to just take my heart out of the equation, she said. Cortez said that she focused her mind on her training and just tried to do her job. She said that normally calls aren't on hold, but to have a list of calls, and they're all really priority calls that you have to hurry up and dispatch, it really was the worst experience of my life, she said. Cortez said that she took a break when a supervisor arrived. She went to the bathroom, called her husband to make sure he was safe, which he was, and then she cried. Then she sat on a call taking position until it was time for her to leave. Leticia Chavez, 30, one of the day shift supervisors, was out of town that weekend with her husband. They had gone to Arlington to watch a Rangers game when she got a call from one of her co-workers who was working in Odessa. I answered my cell phone, and I could hear chaos, and she was like, "We need your help. We have an active shooter. I know you're out of town, but can you help us?" Chavez said she stayed in the car while the Rangers game started and called more people to go into work, including the supervisors, and then she had to call record services. I really don't remember where they were requesting them or what they were requesting them for. I just know I called Neil Poole to go pick up vehicles that were left in the roadway. I just stayed on the phone with them. I could hear 911 phone calls ringing nonstop and just thinking, I wish I could be here to help them answer those calls. While 5 people were originally in the office, 9 other people came into the office to help take calls. Director of Public Safety Communication, Michelle Rocca, 54, said that she was called in about an active shooter and was helping dispatch as well as manage the office. On my way to the building, I'm calling my kids. Where are you at? Make sure you stay home, you know, because I knew they were out and about. She said that one thing that made the situation difficult was that there were reports of multiple vehicles with the shooter being in one car and then a postal truck. We know the postmaster called in all his trucks and then kind of did a roll call of what truck was missing. So in the process of them returning to their offices, we got calls on about every post office truck, she said, adding that while they tried to figure out which postal truck was missing, some officers wanted her to make a timeline of how events had happened. Rocca said that with the mass shooting in El Paso, all of the ambulances could go to one spot, but there were multiple locations that needed ambulances over a 3 or 4 mile radius in Odessa. They were scattered everywhere, she said, adding that the volume of calls made it difficult to pick where to send them. Rocca said that while many calls were high priority related to the shooting, others were regular calls, and some calls were from national and international media that were tying up the lines. One of the dispatchers, Rocca said, heard gunshots as she took a call from law enforcement officers. Rocca said that while it took around 54 minutes until the gunman was killed at Synergy, the calls kept coming. It was 4 hours before it calmed down, she said. In that 4 hours' time, we had 1,100 calls, which is typically how many they would get in a day and a half to 2 days. Rocca said she didn't leave the office until around midnight. Cortez said that things didn't calm down for her until she got home. She said that there was hardly any traffic on her drive home. She ate dinner, had a drink, and went to sleep. Chavez said that she came into work the next day and that all the initial five who also worked Saturday had showed up to work. She said she mainly came in to check on people and see if they needed a break or needed to leave. Cortez said that coming into work the next day was similar to her drive home. The drive into work was just weird, like looking around and thinking about what happened. I just kept thinking about the people who were like at a stoplight and then got shot. I'm at a stoplight just looking around, and then I come in and everyone is just really somber, but we just still had to do our job like normal. Rocca said that since the shooting, there has been a peer support group and debriefings for those who need to talk about major or minor incidents. She added that there was also counseling available and that the Family Resiliency Center is also an option to those who were impacted by the mass shooting. The Texas Association of Public Safety Communications Officials, TXAPCO, selected the City of Odessa Public Safety Communications Department as the 2019 Telecommunicator Team of the Year for their work during the mass shooting. Those listed are people who worked that day, including dispatcher Joyce Mudd, dispatcher and QA specialist Sonia Cortez, dispatcher Alicia Taylor, dispatcher Keely Buford, and dispatcher Abby Wilkin. Those dispatchers who were working during the shooting are reportedly to be honored at the 2021 TX Public Safety Conference in Galveston. Those who weren't scheduled but worked that day included Leticia Chavez, Michelle Rocca, Cynthia Scott, Gina Fierro, Tiffany Baker, Kirsty Minahan, Kaylee Faust, Rebecca Ellison, Kara Thurman, and Darla Tillman. Andrews Strong. An Andrews woman is thankful that she wasn't shot, but continues to recover from an injury that sidelined her for months. See Friday's OA for more on Penny Moore's recovery. A gift from God. Fatai Quadri walks with a limp, which she says is an improvement and a gift from God. Meet this family man who was shot 3 times last year in Friday's OA. Quilting Love. Some West Texas quilters are using their talents to honor the victims of the August 31st mass shooting. Take a look at these works of art in Saturday's OA. A family man, Perla Garcia was widowed after 15 years and 4 children with husband Raul, who was killed driving his truck near Odessa. He loved his kids. They were everything to him. Perla reflects on his life and on life without him in the A family man. Perla Garcia was widowed after 15 years and 4 children with husband Raul, who was killed driving his truck near Odessa. He loved his kids. They were everything to him. Perla reflects on his life and on life without him in the August 30th OA. A year later, Odessa's top lawmen talk about what was learned from the tragedy and how law enforcement has coped during the last 12 months. Don't miss the August 30th OA. Sweet Anderson. The tiniest victim of the mass shooting is a precious toddler, and her family is giving back in big ways to Odessa. Meet the Davis family in the August 31st OA. Odessa Rotary. The Odessa Rotary Club has an Odessa Strong commemoration free lunch for uniformed first responders planned 11 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. Monday at the Central Fire Station. the bridge. The bridge will live stream a special remembrance service and prayer vigil to honor victims, survivors, and first responders at 6 p.m. Sunday. The in-person event will be just for the victims and their families, as well as a few invited first responders, but will live stream the event for the public. Visit thebridgeodessa.org/home.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.